everybody, and welcome once again to the Focus Fire Podcast, episode number 28. I'm Alan. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jeff Dirty Pool.
What's up, hoes?
Focus Fire is a semi-regular competitive 40K podcast. Hoping we'll do better. Just as the TFG radio guys. If we can do better than them, our job is done.
It is a high bar to jump over.
If you have any questions or comments, email us at focusfirepodcast@gmail.com. And now you can also check us out on Facebook. Search for Focused Fire. And there you can see Jeff, who's updating our... what kind of campaign is that called again?
Oh, it's our crusade, baby.
Yeah, our crusade campaign. And today, we're going to talk about... We have three topics for you. We're going to talk, we're going to an RTT, our first seems like since February, and down in Orange County where they're, we're going through lockdown again. I heard he's locking down a bunch of counties, so hopefully Orange County's not one of them. The second topic we have is CP discipline, and the third one topic we have for you is we're going to talk a little bit about questionable rules in Interact. So first of all, Jeff, you're going to need to start us off with lists because... I don't have mine with me because it's on my other computer, but go ahead and start us off. Let's talk about our RTT.
You suck. So we're going to an RTT. Should be fun. It'll probably be, this will probably come out on Friday, so it'll be the day after this podcast comes out or the day that this podcast comes out. But it's, you know, a small little RTT in Orange County, probably 12 players or something like that, which is, you know, good. We haven't had a RTT in a long time, so we are kind of in the lockdown here in LA, and we're fiending to just get a games played, let alone a tournament. So, I of course am bringing orcs because I'm bringing orcs because I got them painted, and why the fuck not? Kind of been playing them for a year and a half now, 2 years almost, something like that, or some shit, I don't know. But I'm bringing. Shock attack guns. Let's see if we can make them work. I brought them to the last RTT I went to back in like September or October or something, and they did pretty good for me. You know, they're not as good as they used to be now that you don't have the Vigilist attachment for the super shock attack gun, but they're good enough, you know, and they give me a little long-range firepower that's untargetable, and they kind of just sit back and, you know, maybe they do something, maybe they don't. But they give you enough threat to like pop a rhino or, keep your opponent honest. And, you know, they can spike, you know, if you roll strength 11, you can just point it at something and just make that thing go away. So, they're nice to have. And they also, I play them as death skulls. So they get the reroll, one reroll the hit, one reroll the wound, and one reroll the damage, which makes them pretty reliable. They're not that great into things with high invulnerable saves like custodies or demons and things like that, but, you know, against like most Imperial, like Space Marines and Sisters, they don't really have much invuln, so they're pretty good at getting that stuff taken care of. But they also allow me to take While We Stand, We Fight on them. Those are my most expensive models in the unit, in my army, I mean. So they kind of sit back in the backfield, and unless I'm getting tabled, they get me 15 secondary points, which essentially counteracts my opponent's thin their ranks points, which because the rest of my army is a bunch of boys. It's a five unit of boys, four units of 30, and one unit of 20. And it's a unit of 10 Gretchen, two battalions, by the way. One unit of 10 Gretchen, two units of commandos, just bare bones. Everything's death skulls, so everything has a six up invulnerable save. And I used to run a custom force field, but I'm going to try it this time without a custom force field because I find that, like, the custom force field, it's like a 9-inch bubble of 5-up invulnerable save. And, yeah, I usually get it on turn 1. But, like, by turn 2, or if I go first, even on turn 1 sometimes, I don't have the benefit of that force field. I'm usually, like, spreading out and moving around. And just, I've been finding that I don't get as much value out of it in 9th edition as I did in 8th edition. So I'm going to try it without that. Instead, my other three HQs are, I have a Pain Boy because I don't have the points for Grotznik, and I want my Pain Boy to be my Warlord, which he is. He takes Follow Me Lads, which gives him the Advance and Charge aura that a War Boss would normally have. So he kind of has a double role. He gives my army Advance and Charge and Morale Mitigation, but also gives him a 6-up Feel No Pain. So he's there to kind of do that. And then I got two weird boys, and I'm deciding to give both of them warp head, so they get two powers and they can cast two powers every turn. Both of them are taking the jump just for some redundancy, and then one is taking the Duskfall spell, which you cast it on an enemy unit with an 18, and that enemy unit gets minus one to their to hit, and everything I attack it with gets an extra AP. So it's kind of nice against, like, you know, Terminators and Custodes and things like that to help me pierce that 2+ armor. And the other weird boy takes the Fist of Gork, which I choose a character, and that character gets +2 strength and +2 attacks. And the reason I'm doing that is I'm trying out the new Forge World Warboss on Warbike. I used to run the Warboss. I ran Brennan at LBO last year, actually, on Warbike. And it's good, but it's been upgraded. It became 5 attacks base, and it got the Warboss keyword, so you can give it the biggest boss stratagem to give it +1 attack and +1 wound. So this thing goes up to 8 wounds, 6 attacks, and I give it the claw, the relic claw. So it's hitting on 2s, strength 12, -3, 3 damage. He can advance and charge. He moves 14 inches, and he's Duskfall, so he can reroll one hit roll, and he rerolls all the wound rolls on his claw because it's the relic. So he's super killy. I can cast Fist of Gork on him. He goes up to 8 attacks, strength 16. He just missiles in somewhere 14 plus D6 inches, advance and charge. He only gives advance and charge to vehicles and bikes, but he can do it on himself. So he advances, fights something, kills it. And if he doesn't kill it, he fights on death and hopefully kills it then, you know, with 16 strength, 16 attacks. So he's kind of a little missile, T7. He has a 4+ invulnerable save. So he's not necessarily going to die from the return fight. If it's fighting like something like a smash captain with only has like 4 or 5 attacks and they're high damage or whatever, he might be able to live through that. So that's the list, right? It's just a bunch of boys, a couple of weird boys, a war boss, some shock attack guns, and a pain boy. And then 2 units of commandos. The commandos are there to get me deploy scramblers and or engage in all front points. And the Gretchen are there. I had originally played this list with no Gretchen, and I found that my shock attack guns were sitting in the back, and I was having to babysit them with a unit of boys. So there's usually a place that, you know, the Gretchen can hide behind obscuring terrain, and then the weird boy, sorry, the shock attack guns can sit in front of the Gretchen in the obscuring terrain and see through it. And so they're protected from the character rule because they have the Gretchen, even though they're behind them. They have all these boys that are, you know, far away, but they get protected by the character rule because they're near these Gretchen who are hiding out of line of sight, doing their thing. So that's the list. It's a bunch of boys and some characters.
Sounds like the 8th edition orc list.
It's the same list. It's essentially the same list I was running at LVO minus the tank busters.
Shock attack gun and a lot of boys.
Yeah. And I love the shock attack gun, man. It's like my jam because, you know, I roll 3s a lot, but I also roll 11s a lot. So it's like, you know. And the nice thing is you get to roll the strength before you choose your target. So you can kind of get a little bit of, you know, you can see what your strength is. You don't get to see the number of shots yet, but, and it is a blast weapon, which is kind of nice, I guess. So, I mean, I don't know. I'll have to check if it's a blast weapon. I think it is. But either way, you get to check your strength. So if you do roll that strength 11, you can point it at the most dangerous topic, the most dangerous target your opponent has, and just hope you roll well. And it's going to tie into another topic we have later. But my CP on this, I start with 7 CP, and I don't really spend it on much.
7 for an orc? Oh, that's right. Never mind. I was totally wrong. I'm still thinking we're playing 8th edition. I just had a flashback. 18, yeah.
It's a lot less than my other ones. But, I start with 12. I pay 3 for a second battalion, and I pay 3 for upgrading my weird boys and my war boss, but then I get 1 for my warlord traits, so I go to 7. I'm going to spend 3 on green tide every game. And then other than that, I don't really... I'll spend 2 on, like, fight twice with my war boss. And I might fight twice with the boys if I have the need to, but typically I don't. And then I can do, I said fight on death, but it's, the more DACA. No, it's called more DACA. So if I roll like a high strength, like strength 11 or 12 with my shock attack gun, I'll probably use the Exploding Fives stratagem for 2 CP, and then I might even spend a CP to reroll the number of shots if I roll a 1 or something. And that's like the only time I do that is if I'm investing in like a strength 11 shot where I need to get a bunch of hits.
The one thing that affected your Oryx that in 9th edition now is the reroll is not as good as it used to be. Because you can't reroll for the number of loot. You don't have loot, but you can't reroll for the number of loot shots anymore, can you?
You can, because it's heavy D3. So you can reroll the number of shots in a weapon.
But and for what about for your shock attack gun? Do you have to? Do you get to reroll those dice for the strength? Or
I can't. No, I cannot reroll the strength. That's just it is what it is. You just kind of roll your two dice and hope you get an 11 or a 12. But even if you get like a 9, it's still good. Like it's a strength 9 gun. But sometimes you roll 3.
I think if you had to reroll them, because it used to be you could just reroll one of the dice, which is really good. If you got a 6 and a 1, you know, you get to reroll just that 1. But now you don't get a reroll at all on it. So that'd be interesting to see how effective that's going to be.
Yeah, I played them in the last RTC we played, and they did okay. I mean, like, they're not, like, great, but they're good enough to, like, they blew up some rhinos in some clutch turns. They killed some custodies. You know, they do work. They're not, like, all-stars, but they're good, and they get me 15 secondary points while they're doing it. So.
Yeah, because a lot of people are also taking gas these days. Do you have to take a certain clan to take gas?
You can include them in any army, but a lot of people take him in Goths because he gives reroll ones to hit the Goths. But he kind of works on everyone, and he doesn't break your clan traits either because he's kind of like, you know, he's like one of those HQs that you can include in your list without breaking your chapter tactics.
Now, my list, I'm going Zeke.
Aw, baby.
That bird, I'm taking the Lord of Change, the Exalted Lord of Change, with all the accoutrements that we're seeing now out of all these demon players. I'm taking 30 whores. I'm thinking about taking a herald. I haven't made up my mind yet. I'm thinking I'll take some summoning points. If I need flamers, I can just summon flamers. If I need a herald, I can just summon a herald. So I don't really since I'm taking just a patrol for my Zeke demons, I don't really need to fill out that second HQ slot. So,
and you're not going to take the changeling?
We'll talk about the changeling in a second, but no. I don't think, for 100 points, that's for a 6+ and vulnerable save, and all he does is stand around and cast Gaze of Fate, which is kind of nice, but I don't know. 100 points is 100 points, and I'm kind of hurting on points.
I can see that.
I'm taking a battalion of 1,000 Sons. I'm taking Araman, and I'm taking a Demon Prince. Demon Prince is good because he has access to all the psychic trees as well as being a beat stick in combat. Now, I'm still trying to figure out what troops I'm going to take. Still, my list is still kind of up in the air. It's also on my other computer, but I want to take some, basically, 2 squads of 5 Scarab Occult Terminators, and I was just about to take some Rubric Marines as my troops because they're really durable. They can handle. They can just sit back and cast some spells, some buff spells on some people. But the problem is there's that secondary where if you don't have a psyker in your army, you get to go ham on your opponent's psykers. And since I have so many psykers, I'm thinking maybe I might want to take cultists instead because cultists are basically the only thing in the Thousand Sons book that is not a psyker. And then that would kind of give my opponent issues getting that secondary. But cultists are not that good. And we don't get that, what's it, Tide of Traitors where you get to take a cultist off and put them back on again at full strength. And so the Thousand Sons cultists are not all that great. I wonder if Zangors are psychic. I don't think they are. Maybe I'll take some Zangors. So that's basically it. Oh, and I'm taking the Magnus. Now, my big decision is, do I take Magnus as part of the battalion? And so he's automatically going to be the warlord, or do I take him as a super heavy detachment, in which case I can make the Lord of Chains the warlord. I think I'm going to try that, because one of the things that came out of last weekend was T.G. Lanigan played a list that was really similar to mine, and I've been talking about it for a while, and he basically did the same thing, but he had a Lord of Change, he had a Herald of Zeench, and he had the Changeling. He had 30 pink horrors, and he had like four squads of four Nurglings, I believe. And then he had a patrol of Thousand Sons. He had Armin, a Demon Prince, and some cultists. So he has a very similar list to mine. He's taking Nurglings. I'm not, because I want to stay just fluffy and pure Zeench. And also, it gives me the Lotus of Zeench, which is, you know, that's another story. But even more protection for my nearly unkillable Lord of Change. So I have to make some choices, because I have to... And he went 5-0 with that list, so it did really well. He said Magnus never died, and because the Lord of Change is so good that you don't need to take the exalted power that keeps him alive even more, because with the he has the impossible robes, and he is usually, if he's a warlord, he is in corporeal form, and then he gets to roll two shots randomly on the exalted Lord of Change table, and all those powers on the Lord of Change, one's kind of mediocre, but 5 out of 6, two of them are really good, 3 of them are good, and 1 of them is just okay. So giving him 2 extra powers makes him even better. And Magnus was used to be a big liability, because he could be killed turn 1. And you've done it before. You've jumped like your tank buses up and shot Magnus, and
made you
sad. And
I love making you sad.
And now that the table's much shorter, and the deployment zones are even more wonkier, but the ranges of weapons haven't really changed. It seems like the ranges on weapons are even getting farther. And especially like things like white scars get to move so fast, and things just dropping out of the sky. So Magnus could be a very big liability if it was 8th edition. But now, if you look at your opponent's sheet, and he has the ability to kill Magnus turn 1 before he buffs up, you have the option now of spending 3 CPs and putting him in reserve, which is huge. Now, you lose a turn of Magnus, but you only lose 1 turn, and you keep him alive, and he's on Weapon of Mass Destruction. So I kind of like Magnus. Now, we're going to go into our next topic, CP discipline. Now, this list burns CPs like crazy. Now, just before you start, because if the Lord changes my warlord, I get the 2, I have a patrol of the demons, which I get for free. I have to pay 3 CPs for a battalion, and then I got to pay 3 CPs for Magnus. So that's 6 CPs right there.
Wait, hold on. Why are you taking a battalion of Thousand Sons? Why wouldn't you just take a patrol of Thousand Sons?
Because I guess I could take 2 patrols.
No, just take 1 patrol. You get 2 HQs. You get 2 elite slots. So you can get both your units of Scarabs and both your HQs and save yourself a CP. And then you can also take more troops. You can take up to 3 troops in a patrol. So you can take troops if you need to. And you save yourself points if you...
Yeah, because I'm not taking a 3rd HQ, because I was going to take a 3rd HQ. So I guess I could take 2 patrols, a patrol of demon and a patrol of Thousand Sons, right?
And yeah, I'll be okay. Yeah. And then Magnus and a super heavy auxiliary. So you're down 5.
If your warlord is in a patrol, you get those CPs refunded, don't you?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But you take 2 patrols and a super heavy, and you're down 5.
Right. And I have the option of making Magnus the Warlord, in which case I don't have to pay those 3 CPs for the Super Heavy. I don't have to pay the 3 CPs for the Battalion or Patrol, but I'd have to pay for the Demons. So
yeah, you can't make Magnus your Warlord. It's just dumb. Like, he's a shitty Warlord. I mean, it's worth 3 CP to make the Lord of Change your Warlord, because minus 1 damage is what makes the Lord of Change good. You know, it turns a lot of the, like, 2 damage stuff that you're going to see, like Plasma and Scepters and stuff like that. Think about, like, Repentia with their 2 damage attacks. You know, it's going to change your day, you know.
And then if I have to reserve Magnus, it's 3 CPs there. I have the option of taking a second Warlord trait. I might not be able to afford that now. And then, you know, you take 1... or 2 relics. You have to take the Impossible Robes. Usually you take the Dark Matter Crystal on a Demon Prince. So you're just going through, you're paying through the nose.
So
you start with basically just a handful of CPs.
Well, I wanna talk about this. We've talked about it before on the podcast, but we'll talk about it in context here for you. You know, what I always do is I look at my work list, right? I'm starting with 7 CP, which is not a lot, but I think to myself, okay, I get 1 CP a turn, so I have 12. Okay, I'm gonna Green Tide for 3. That brings me to 9. I'll probably fight on Death of My War Boss to 7. I'll probably more Daco ones to 5, and then after that, it's kind of like a reroll here or there, and then like maybe another more DACA or fight twice at the boys or something, you know. It's not a lot of there's not a lot of CP usage, and when I have like 4 or 5 extra CP where I'm like, I don't know what I'm gonna use it on, I'll just kind of see what happens in the game. Sometimes I'll use it on a lot of times I'll use it on auto passing, because someone will get me down to 1 orc and I'm like, well, I can't take the morale check because I'll lose him, so I need to like auto pass my morale, and so I spend 5 CP to bring back those orcs, you know. And so, you know, sometimes I don't have to do that, but you know, it happens more often than you would think, where I'm like, oh, I got to spend 2 on morale. Now for your demons, Pink Horrors have got a real boost with the morale thing, because you give them the banner, so the icon, so they're just like, hey, if I roll a 1, I get some guys back. But even if you have 30 dudes and you lost 15 of them. Before, in 8th edition, you would lose the whole squad. They'd all be gone, pretty much. Now it's like, you lose 1, and then you're gonna have to, like, 12 or something, and you lose, like, 2 or 3 more, you know, maybe 1 or 2 more, you know? So you can lose 75% of your squad and still be around at the end of the day on an objective or whatever. And since they have a 4-up invulnerable save, and it's like, yeah, it's pretty good. So, you know, I what I do is I look at your list. I'm like, look, you don't need to spend 2 to auto pass morale with the pinks anymore. Because that used to be a thing. You just have to like, you used to split your pinks. And right. It was like, oh, I gotta do my morale.
I lost 30 models that turn.
Yeah. Yeah. But you no longer have that issue, which is an addition change thing. But then I look at the demon stratagems, like other than the one where your opponent perils 2d3. And then the one from Thousand Suns where you can ignore perils on your guys, like that's it. So like starting with 3 CP, 2 CP at the game to start the game, it's like, all right, that's fine. Like you don't really need it. And Magnus and the Lord of Change get +2 to cast. You know.
Yeah, Magnus is immune to perils of the warp. And another thing is, if anybody within Magnus is 9 inches of Magnus, they get to reroll 1s on their psychic test. So perils is not too big of an issue with Magnus running around. I do use the psychic power, the stratagem, +2 to cast every once in a while. If I have to get a power off, the +2 to cast one does get used every once in a while.
That's like 1 CP though, right?
And you get 1 CP every turn anyway, which is kind of good. And you also have Gaze of Fate, Some have the ability to get one free reroll, and it's not like the reroll both dice reroll. It's just reroll one dice reroll, which is kind of even better. So they don't need to reroll. Where I do use my rerolls a lot is you need to get psychic powers off, and sometimes you do need to reroll those, and those can be critical. And as I mentioned, the Zeech has a lot of variable damage. They have a lot of things that do like a D6 damage. Like the Lord of Change, his sword does a D6 damage. And also Magnus, his smite does a D6 damage. And sometimes it's critical to reroll that. Now, this is
why I don't think you can even reroll the smite damage anymore.
Can you? I think you can reroll damage, the amount of damage.
Yeah, but it's not a damage roll. It's just a D6 for smite.
Okay.
You can reroll the sword on the Lord of Change, but.
So I guess I don't really use that many CPs anymore, and I have to be very strategic, I guess, where I use them, and I have to have a lot of discipline, because you're really good with your CP and your CP discipline. If you roll crappy, a lot of the times you'll just let it ride, and I know sometimes when I roll like a damage of a one, I'll often re-roll it and I'll get a one or a two. So it's like almost like I wasted a CP for absolutely nothing.
Yeah, my thing is like I've been playing with these shock attack guns and I just let them ride. I'm like, let's let it go. You know, like sometimes they're great, sometimes they suck. And that's really helped me. And so my challenge to you, Alan, is at this tournament, I challenge you to not make Magnus your warlord. Start with 5 CP, 6 CP, and even 4 CP. And then you have 3 CP to reserve Magnus. And if you start the game with 1 CP, or 2 or 3 or something, you're going to learn to be more disciplined. Because one thing I noticed about you, Alan, when you play is when you have a lot of CP in your pocket, you're going to spend it on a bunch of crap. But when you have 1 or 2, you're like, I don't know, I might need to use it for an interrupt or something, you know? So you want to, because when you have 2 CP, your army is a lot more dangerous. And this is true of anyone. But just like, you know, I think what you should try this weekend is just do some CP discipline. Try it out.
Yeah,
do not reroll anything.
Yeah, I'm like a rich kid at a candy store. So I'll just go crazy, just like checking CP around. But you do need to be disciplined, and maybe I play video games, and I'm kind of like this in video games too. It's like when I have like a lot of hit points or whatever, I run around, I go crazy, I go nuts. But as soon as I take like half damage or like I'm down to like a quarter damage, everybody says, "Oh, you play really good, man. You should start off that way." So I play seriously. I play like a maniac in the beginning when I'm flush with hit points and CPs. But once I settle down a little bit, then I'll play like a very strategic game.
Yeah, well, maybe if you start with 1 CP, you'll play the whole game strategically. Because that's likely what's going to happen. I mean, you're going to face some list with a giant gun line, and you go, okay, you can kill Magnus on turn 1, so I'm going to put him away. Yeah, put him in. The only other thing I would reroll is like Weaver of Fates or Glamour of Zeench to buff up Magnus when he comes in. Like, I wouldn't reroll ever a cast on a damage spell. I would only thing I'd reroll is like a critical warp time where you're like, you put Magnus out there and you're going to do some damage and then you're going to warp time it back. Like, then you might want to reroll that if you fail, you know. But
yeah, that is one advantage also of having, there's a lot of redundancy. Well, there's a lot of, in this list, if you just have like just a bunch of regular casters, you have this with the orcs, you'll get your powers off. Not only will you get your powers off, but, you know, your smites are like deadly. If you have a bunch of regular casters, you can be denied all the time, and if you're psychic heavy, you know, you can't afford that. Lord of Change is +2 to cast. Magnus is +2 to cast. Armin's +1 to cast. I might get an extra warlord trait that makes my Demon Prince +1 to cast. And then with Magnus, you know, he has his aura of reroll ones. So you really need that dependability of being able to throw your psychic powers down and without counting on that reroll, so, unless you were like desperately need it. You roll like 2 2s, which is like be worse than that. But
And then you know I don't know. To me, like, yeah, you should play it with low CPs and see what happens, because I think for our listeners, you know, it's something that you guys, you know, like a lot of people are like, oh, you know, don't spend all your CP before the game. You can't be taking, you know, a Vanguard and, you know, and a Spearhead, you know, yada, yada, yada. But you just have to look at your army list and go like, well, what am I going to send my CP on? If you're a list that is like, oh, I have like fucking 10 great stratagems and I could blow through 10 CP in a turn, no problem. Then you probably just want to take a single detachment, you know, where you start with 12, you know, you don't want to start with 4, right, if that's the case.
That's exactly the way Harlequins are, because Harlequins, you can spend a lot of CPs before the game there too. You can buy your characters, you know, a bunch of those, what are those heroic abilities called? Pivotal rolls, yes. You can get like a bunch of pivotal rolls. You can buy a great Harlequin. You can buy a bunch of relics. They have great relics. And so you have to have but the thing about the Harlequins is they have great stratagems and they depend greatly on using those stratagems. So you really need pre-game discipline with your CPs with Harlequins. And you need to start with about 10 CPs or so, or 9 CPs. You need to start them. But other armies, you know, their stratagems are not that great, but sometimes they have great relics. So you really need to analyze your army and know, you know, can I survive on 1 or 2 CPs? Because Don Hootson was famous for running around with like just like a handful of CPs for the longest time, but he never really needed them that much. So, you know, it's interesting. So tell you what, I'll try to get by with as few CPs as possible. We'll see what happens. That'll be an interesting challenge.
The trick is when you roll a shitty roll, like a damage roll, you're like, yeah, all right, that sucks.
That'd be.
So what's our last topic tonight, Alan?
Last topic is we're going to talk about wacky rules interactions. Now, this basically comes about because about a week ago, Chapter Tactics had a discussion about an Ultramarine relic. Now, the Ultramarine relic, you know, we could argue the English language is not precise, as they say, as they tried to make it sound in their podcast, because there is a lot of room with the English language of interpretation, and that's why you need, for contracts, you need to hire lawyers, and then you need like a bunch of lawyers when things go sour to try to figure out what exactly everything meant and what everything said. So there's a lot of imprecision with the English language, and so there's a lot of vagueness in some of these rules. And do you remember what the name of that relic was called, the Ultramarine relic?
Oh, it's like Seal of Oath or something like that, or Oath of the Seal, or something with Oath and Seal in it.
Basically, what it does is it allows you to pick an enemy unit, and everybody gets to reroll hits and wounds against that enemy unit if you're within 6 inches of the model with the relic. Well, they were reading it so that, like, you basically acted like the Rupert Gulliman ability of the old 8th edition one, where everybody gets to reroll hits and reroll wounds. Now, we know that's not true, because they've basically scaled way back like we thought they would. In 9th edition, all these rerolls that went nuts in the previous edition. But also, just by the writing of that rule, because it had you pick an enemy unit. Now, if everybody within 6 inches got the reroll hits and wounds to everybody, why would they have you pick an enemy unit? So there's either some misinterpretation was going on with the rule, or it was definitely not rule as intended, and they're trying to spin it as that was a raw argument. Now, my point of view is back in the day, back in when we before we had FAQs and we had a the questionable IMAT, we always had the attitude of you always took whenever there's a vague rule, you always took the less favorable outcome. So you never took any if something could be like superpower, you always took like the less favorable. Now everybody's kind of like trying to go rules as written. Hey, I get the super ability. Now I think that's kind of bad because if that's true, then like for example, you'll come across like a tournament and like half the players will now show up as Ultramarines because they want such a huge overpowered ability. And another thing is too is like GW does they're reacting better to issues because it seems like they fixed that issue. And people will show up the day of a tournament, and tournament organizers generally don't want to get involved with this. And they just usually let everything just go. So your tournament organizer won't help you. So it's kind of like, so my question is you as a professional, you're a lawyer, as people should know. You're a professional rules writer, professional rules reader. What is your take on what should happen and if we should always use rules as written or rules as intended? How do you think we should approach this problem?
Well, I used to think I was going to be a rules as written kind of guy. I'm like, oh, let's play it as it lies. Let's just read the rule and apply the rule. But the more and more I played competitive 40K, the more and more I realized that GW is horrible at writing rules. And although they are doing a lot better than they used to do, you can't really trust them. Because here's what happened with this Seal of Oath thing, is it used to just be like you pick a unit and your whole army gets reroll hits and wounds against that unit and your opponent's army. But they changed it in their FAQ to only affect core units, gets the rerolls. But instead of saying against the target unit, it just said unenemy, so it applied to your whole opponent's army. But then they fixed it. They changed their FAQ a second time, and they made it to it applies to only the selected unit. So they fixed it quickly, like within like a couple of days, I think, or something like that. So like, good for them. You know, that's a really good. It shows that they're aware of the issue. Someone brought it to their attention. They fixed it. However, to me, that's actually support and kind of a more reason why the community should play rules as intended in a lot of circumstances. Like in this case, in this particular case study we're doing here, it's very clear that they weren't FAQing this relic to suddenly make it let you turn a character into Old Gilliman. It's clear from anyone who looks at this, no one can look at you with a straight face and say, oh, you know what they were trying to do? They were trying to make this relic allow you to turn a character into Gilliman. No, they're just trying to make it only apply to core units. You can tell. Now, and then you have this thing as a lawyer called the smell test, the sniff test. Right? You know, someone will say something to you, like, does that pass the sniff test? You know, does it smell like shit? and that smells like shit. If someone was trying to say to you, yeah, GW intended to expand this relic to be super powerful. No, they were just trying to make it only apply to core units. You could tell. They added the word core in there. So it's a clear sign that like they got the rule wrong, but their intent is what they're trying to do is clear, in my opinion. Now there's always gonna be an argument on what these rules writers are trying to do, because most of the time they don't know what they're doing. They're getting better, but they're fucking retarded. Like the things they do are like, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, okay, whatever. You know, But I lean more toward rules as intended, and it's hard to determine what that intent is, but I think it's important to kind of at least try and as Alan said, if you're not clear on what the intention is, then go with the least powerful interpretation. You know, go, is this really what they're trying to do? Like, you know, this and that, you know, like when they gave Plasma and Scepter's Blast, clearly that wasn't a mistake. I mean, like, maybe it was, who knows, right? But like, I don't think anyone could look at you and go like, yeah, we meant to give them blast. I mean, it makes sense their gun is blast. Is it overpowered? Yes. You know, you could go, well, did they intend to like underprice? Like for instance, the Taunar. They, in the chapter approved or the new points, it was like 300 points below where it should be because they didn't. They made one of its guns cost zero or something. And then they fixed it in the FAQ or something, or some other book. I don't recall where they, but they fixed it. So they made it go from like 800 points to 1200 points, or something like that. It's clearly, they didn't intend to have this thing be that cheap, but here it was, you know? So I think to me, you have to look at, you have to try and discern the intent when you see something that's clearly out of whack. And just go from there and just play the game, play it, you know, although, you know, I think Salty John wrote an article on this about play it straight. I think it's a pretty silly thing to say is play it straight, quote unquote, because that's subjective. It's, you know, it's all what you think is straight and what they think is straight. But if you can look at a ruling or some interaction, rules interaction, you go like, oh, geez, is that really, do they really intend to have this broken outcome? The answer is probably no. And so you should figure out with your TO or as a TO how you want to handle that.
Yeah, we all play video games these days, and it's kind of like an exploit. Something that's in the game that's not intended to be the game that breaks the game, and generally, you know, if you do this in a video game, you'll get banned for it. So something, if you're exploiting something that's not intended to be there, or you're finding things that aren't supposed to be there, and you're trying to use them to your advantage, that's obviously not the proper way you should go about it. So my fear is like at a big GT, something like that, let's say the LVO, like some guys find some obscure rule and I come up with some obscure interpretation of some raw, and then the next day it's like, okay, I'm playing it this way, like the Ultramarine rule, and then you're stuck there at the tournament where these people just, you know, are trying to take advantage of the shoddily written rules. So
yeah,
hopefully we'll try to go more to a rules as intended. Especially they're trying to be a little bit more clear these days, it seems like, and they are rapidly, you know, fixing problems. But there's still issues out there that need to be addressed. So I think, and my problem is also the TOs are really hands off. You know, they don't want, people paid their money and they don't want to, you know, offend anybody. They don't want to drive business away and they don't want to make everybody angry. But TOs kind of sometimes might have to take more of a hard line and rules of intended approach to some of these rules interactions rather than just like, well, that's what the rule says. I guess you can do that. It's like, that might not be good for the game or the tournament. So,
yeah.
All right, I think we're just about done. Did you get any more thoughts on that idea? More thoughts on that topic?
No, I think we covered it pretty well.
All right, so I am looking forward to our first Rogue Trader tournament. Been so long. Got to mask up, douse myself in hand sanitizer, and roll some dice.
Yeah, indeed. And see if you can survive on 2 CP for the game. I want to see how it goes.
That'll be interesting. Yeah, I'll try that and see what happens. It'll be fun.
I'm going to look over and see you on the other side of the room going, God damn it.
I know, really. If I only had one more CP. But yeah, there's a few stratagems like the pink horse for one CP can cast a spell on a 9, and then the flamers I think do like mortal wounds too. They have a stratagem, and then if I took some rubric marines, I could scout the rubric marines forward, kind of like what nurglings do. So, and then I get the double. There's another stratagem where I get the double shoot my terminator. So there's a few stratagems that I use, but I get one free one a turn. So with if I hold them tightly and use them sparingly, I think I'll be okay. All right, and thanks again for listening, everybody. Check us out once again on Focus Fire, our Facebook page. And if you have any questions or comments, feel free to email us at focusfirepodcast@gmail.com. Take us out, Joe.
Thanks, guys. Have a great time and play some games and be good.
All right. Take it easy, everybody. You always, people just stumble on some obscure, broken rules. Like, there's so many codexes and so many things that are just constantly, like, that's what we saw basically at the LVO last year, was the Florida guys found, you know, some of the weird interactions between Vigilus and the Space Marine Codex and, you know, Chaplain Dreadnoughts and
the
other stuff. So you have all these forces kind of come together into a stew of stew of brokenness. So
stew of bullshit, if you ask me. But yeah, I got you. All right, Alan. Take it easy, man.
Saturday.